Hello and welcome back to the Roundtable Sports Podcast. I am your host, John Newman, and we might have a guest calling in today. Tyler, I'm not sure if Mr. U-Hawk's going to be calling in here or not, but this time of the day is around when he's getting off work, so I decided to send him a text message and let him know if he had any takes to deliver. He could always call in to the podcast. He's been a guest on several other episodes. Today, we're breaking down, you know, what happened week one, and how I did with my picks last week. So, I'm just going to let you know, I was 8-6. That's not too bad. You know, that's a pretty good batting average. And I called, you know, some pushes. I called Washington and Philadelphia to be a push, and I called Cincinnati and Seattle to be a push. However, you know, I want to start with, you know, my most impressive performances. In my opinion, you know, I think Lamar Jackson really, really put the league on notice, week one. Granted, it was against the Miami Dolphins, who, are never ready at this point in the season. And honestly, when are they ever ready? They are quite the disaster of a franchise. We had the comeback of Kyler Murray. That impressed me a lot. I thought the Detroit Lions looked pretty good there on the road, and then it kind of all fell apart at halftime. The Philadelphia Eagles making the comeback against the Washington Redskins. You know, I think the Redskins were who Philadelphia thought they were, they kind of had some miscommunications and whatnot in the first half there, and they were forced to make the comeback. But I made the correct call on that game being a push. I think it was final score was like 21-20 or something like that. It was a real close game. Might have been more points scored in that one. But I don't have, you know, the results pulled up. I just have, you know, how I made my picks. Kansas City covering against Jacksonville, big cover. I called that one with my hometown Chiefs, and another impressive performance there with Sammy Watkins. I said he's going to have the season of his career, folks, and he had the best game of his career. Had something like 180, 190 yards and 3 touchdowns. Was really, really impressed with the way that the Chiefs were able to kind of dog that chippy Jaguars defense and got them very emotional. Miles Jack, of course, getting tossed out of the game for punching a player. Although it looked like it was Jalen Ramsey who initiated it with the first punch. They don't like the continued fighting and bickering back and forth, and Miles Jack got canned, got tossed from the game. My misses were, you know, Atlanta at Minnesota. Minnesota looked to be an impressive team out there against the Falcons. The Falcons really disappointing. It looks like, you know, the end of that two-headed monster in the backfield with Coleman and Freeman kind of has a pretty big effect on their offense overall. Julio Jones with the ankle or with the wrist injury, you know, that has a deep effect on them as well. Buffalo at New York, I thought that the Jets were going to handle business there. They did not. I actually took Tampa Bay over San Francisco last week, just thinking, you know, Tampa Bay had some new pieces that were going to help them gel together, but that was obviously not true. I was rooting for Jameis. I always will root for Jameis. I think he's a good character, a positive personality in the sport. Since, you know, some of the allegations and everything, since Florida State, he's kind of turned around his public persona and everything. Cleveland home against Tennessee, that was embarrassing, to be honest with you. Very embarrassing for Baker Mayfield and the Cleveland Browns to just get steamrolled like that. Shout out to Derrick Henry doing his thing. Really flown under the radar as an NFL player in most people's opinions. You know, he's kind of a mid-tier fantasy guy, but really, really looked good there. I thought the Carolina Panthers at home were going to be maybe a bit too much for the Los Angeles Rams at this point in the season. I was wrong on that note as well, although Carolina gave them a good fight And then the Monday night football game, I obviously missed, thinking that Denver's defense would be too much for Oakland and their young running back, Josh Jacobs. Although I did mention last week that Josh Jacobs was going to be a key and important piece for Oakland. And all that drama with Antonio Brown out of the locker room, they looked well. You know, Darren Waller was looking incredible at tight end. Renfro got a catch. And I'll tell you what, man, the Oakland Raiders, they are not the team that we thought they were. They are possibly a little bit better than we thought they were. Knock on wood if you're with me on that. I don't like saying that stuff as a Chiefs fan, but that's the truth. They had a loud stadium, and they probably will have a very, very loud black hole in their stadium all year. I saw some really, really creepy Chucky costumes out there. That was quite scary. Just on the TV alone. I forget which game it was. I think it was the Titans and Cleveland game where the Cleveland fans tossed some beer on one of the players. That's just despicable. The NFL and everybody are trying to locate exactly who that person is and get them banned from going to NFL games. I kind of agree with that. You shouldn't do that stuff to these people who are out here trying to entertain us and make an interesting football game. So I stopped with my correct picks at Kansas City and Jacksonville to elaborate on the Sammy Watkins performance. Cincinnati at Seattle, I called that one to be a push, and it was. Cincinnati hung in there with the Seahawks, but the Seahawks ultimately ended up pulling that thing out. Indianapolis at Los Angeles, I had a Vegas miss, but I called that thing correctly with saying that the Chargers should take care of business there. I thought they were going to kind of manhandle the Indianapolis Colts, but no Andrew Luck. Not necessarily the problem that we predicted. They're not going to go 0-16 just because they lost Andrew Luck. Jacoby Brissett really looked confident in there and what he was doing, and they will probably continue to build this season around making him comfortable in that pocket and all the stuff that he can do. They got a great offensive line featuring, you know, Quentin Nelson now in his second year. And I haven't gone over the injury report in total yet, but we'll get to that here in a little bit. I had a good cover with Dallas and the New York Giants. I did not actually put any money down this week, but I had the cover with Dallas over the New York Giants. Pittsburgh at New England, big cover there for New England. I thought that the Pittsburgh Steelers were going to show up maybe a little bit better, but they didn't look impressive at all. They got ran out of Gillette Stadium, and hopefully they get something going there, because I don't want to see, you know, an uncompetitive division there in the AFC North, and I want to see a competitive division there. The Browns looked terrible. The Steelers looked terrible. The Ravens looked great. And, you know, the Bengals actually looked all right as well. That's a tough thing, a tough place to go play. They call themselves the 12th man there in Seattle. They are not the loudest stadium, though. I assure you of that. I've been to Arrowhead, have not been there, so I guess I can't say in person or whatnot, but on average, I think Arrowhead Stadium, everybody stands, nobody sits, everybody's loud. The top deck is even louder than those lower level people. They tend to sit maybe a little bit more often than us up in the nosebleeds. And then I missed, I thought that New Orleans would cover. They did not against Houston, of course. That game came down to the wire on Monday Night Football. Very, very interesting game in the first slate of the doubleheader for Monday Night Football. I thought that I thought that, you know, Deshaun Watson looked incredible. Everything he did was amazing. That run into the end zone, you know, Bill O'Brien, I'm not necessarily a huge fan of that play call, your franchise quarterback, diving into the end zone. Like, I think that play is almost designed to where, it has to be stretched out to get maximum yardage, and it takes a huge risk to run that wide with your quarterback, because, you know, you get pinched, with the sideline and you have limited cutback range and all of that, happy stuff. So yeah, I was 8-6 on my Sunday and Monday picks. I, of course, you know, I'm kind of a little bit of a Packers fan, grew up a Brett Favre guy, you know, they got it done last Thursday. And then we'll start, before we get into next week's matchups, we'll go ahead and look at, the Super Bowl odds now after they've shifted. The Patriots go from second to first, now plus 275 favorites. Not really a whole lot of money to be made betting on the Patriots. The Chiefs fall from 1-2, after their performance on the road. They're plus 500, to win the Super Bowl. The Saints go from fourth to third at plus 950. The Eagles, went from third to fourth, at plus 1000 for the Super Bowl. We've got Rams in, fifth place. They were sixth last week. They're now plus 1200 for the Super Bowl. Dallas plus 1300 from being out of the top 10, I believe, last week, now into, did I say that right? I think Dallas is sixth at plus 1300. Seventh, Vikings at plus 1800, another team that I think was out of the top 10 or kind of tied right behind the top 10. The Packers plus 2000. They were ranked 10th. Now they are tied for 8th, and that's a three-way tie with the Chargers, who were 7th, now 8th, plus 2,000, and the Ravens, who were out of the top 10, now plus 2,000 as well. The Chicago Bears were in 5th, and they fell out of that top 10 range. I think they are actually the 11th highest team overall, because I said that two-way tie at 8th place. Before I get into next week's matchups, of course, the big news with Antonio Brown, and the saga continues, and it just worsens. You know, the Patriots are always trying to add pieces, pair him with Josh Gordon and Edelman and the core that they got there. You know, that's a very dangerous receiving core. And I've always maintained that wide receiver is kind of the most overrated position. To have an elite player, but to have a core of guys is obviously important. Just think Reggie Wayne and Marvin Harrison. You think, Dwight Clark and Jerry Rice. You think, the backfield catching and everything that the 49ers had for periods of time. Jerry Rice, really the only, in my opinion, the only, elite top tier wide receiver of all time, and probably the best football player of all time for what he was able to do. Larry Fitzgerald, no rings. Terrell Owens, no rings. Randy Moss, Chris Carter, no rings. Tim Brown, no rings. Steve Smith, no rings. Andre Johnson, no rings. There's just plenty of examples. We even go to tight ends. You know, Tony Gonzalez, no rings. Kellen Winslow, no rings. Jason Witten, no rings. There's guys that have, you know, incredible, career marks. Andre Reed, of course, with Buffalo, that is, you know, one of the most, you know, upsetting stories as far as if you were a fan, you know, 5 years in a row or how many ever years in a row it was that Kelly led them to the Super Bowl with Reed and all of those guys. And they were, you know, not able to get that done. That's why I said, you know, elite wide receiver, Ocho Cinco, all those guys, not as important as they're sold to be, but a receiving core like what they're building in New England is actually, you know, extremely, extremely helpful in terms of winning a Super Bowl. But they were able to trade Demaryius Thomas to the division rival, the Jets, and he hasn't had a great season in the past 2 years, but the Jets think that he can help improve their receiving core. You know, in the past 2 years, he's only had around 600 yards and five touchdowns, so nothing special since, you know, Peyton Manning retired, really. Yeah, you know, I think he's had, you know, more wear and tear on his body, and that tends to happen with receivers over time where they break down. But, you know, I've got to scold Antonio Brown big time here, threatening Mike Mayock with physical violence, acting like the diva that he's been for the past 2 years, putting his family in a situation now where they've got to move again, you know, he has a potential violation of California law that could be brought against him and taping that conversation with John Gruden. And now last night, this despicable news broke about him where an athletic trainer is bringing a case against him in Florida for sexual assault, which accuses him of jerking off and ejaculating on her back, and also physical rape. Requesting, you know, a trial by jury there in the state of Florida, where he is from. And this all, I think, happened within the past 2 years or whatnot, 2 or 3 years since he's kind of became a problem child, for organizations he plays for and, you know, the Shield. I don't like using that very often because I think that's a terrible, terrible, a terrible excuse that the NFL uses to uphold some suppressive rules. But he's right now currently skating the commissioner's exempt list. I think before Friday we'll know for sure if he skates the exempt list. He's really, you know, lucky right now to be on a team with the way that he's acted, and especially a team with championship potential like the New England Patriots. I despise of that organization for everything that they've done. It's hard to believe that there's no tampering involved whenever he signs so quickly after. And I was reading somewhere also, I think this is kind of less of a threat for Antonio Brown, people are saying he potentially violated securities laws with signing a contract under false pretenses with the Oakland Raiders. I think, you know, the way that situation was handled overall benefits Antonio Brown in a case like that. But, you know, we don't know all of the facts, so I'm not going to go, you know, down a laundry list. But I've seen fans comparing that to the Tyreek Hill and everything involved in that, but let me make very clear, rape is obviously a lot worse than anything that Tyreek Hill has been accused of, and that's not really an opinion, that's kind of a general statement that people will typically always agree with, and especially in the fashion that Antonio Brown is being accused of raping and sexually assaulting a trainer who happens to be a world-renowned gymnast as well. I want to get off of that topic because that is sad, sad news. And get into some of the injuries that happened that could cause, you know, some momentum shifts as far as teams go. The Chiefs, Tyreek Hill, has a sternoclavicle injury. I think I said that correctly. Basically, the sternum, the chest area, and the clavicle joint, which is, I think, connects it to, the shoulder somehow. You know, he had a traumatic, hit there that kind of busted it up, and he's going to, luckily for the Chiefs, avoid the injured reserve list, but he's expected to be out for at least 4 to 6 weeks. Staying with the AFC West, the Los Angeles Chargers, Hunter Henry fractured his tibial plateau, which is, I think, fancy for the kneecap. That's an injury that ended J.J. Watt's 2017 season, and I was reading up on the recovery time for it. 3 to 4 months of recovery time is what that typically is. The Falcons, Julio Jones, I briefly mentioned this earlier with that wrist. He's questionable for week 2. Their guard, Chris Lindstrom, is now officially on the IR for a foot injury. The Arizona Cardinals, offensive tackle that came over from the Steelers this offseason, Marcus Gilbert, has an injury there, so that could affect that. That probably did affect, you know, how Kyler Murray was playing at first. In Baltimore, Jimmy Smith, corner, standout corner over the past few seasons, is questionable for week 2 with a knee injury. For Buffalo, receiver Andre Roberts, questionable with a quadriceps injury. Carolina, Bruce Irvin and Greg Olsen, both questionable. I think Bruce Irvin is officially listed as out right now. AJ Green with Cincinnati, out for week 2. Joe Mixon and Travion Williams out of their backfield are both questionable, and their offensive tackle, Cordy Glenn, will be out with a concussion. The Browns, they have, Baker Mayfield currently listed as questionable with a wrist injury. I'd expect Baker Mayfield to play. In Dallas, they have, Tavon Austin, who is currently injured, as well as, Darian Thompson with an ankle injury, and, Taco Charlton, is questionable as well. They've got quite a few players right now injured. Denver, Juwan James, offensive tackle, will be out week 2 versus Chicago. Their fullback has a pectoral strain, and Andy Janovich. And those are kind of, you know, the starters that are injured. Detroit's Jarrett Davis, questionable week 2 versus the Chargers, as well as the defensive end Deshaun Hand, and receiver Jermaine Kearse, obviously, before the season started, was put on the injured reserve. And they also have, I think, Marvin Jones suspended or something like that, for Green Bay. You know, I don't think there's really any starters injured or out for them. They've just got a couple of guys banged up. Oren Burks is not going to play against Minnesota. Houston, you know, they really don't have any starters injured, it doesn't look like to me. They've got a couple of guys questionable, and the guys that they've already put on IR, of course, Lamar Miller out for the season. Duke Johnson shouldering a lot of the load there. They traded for Duke, and he is expected to, you know, steadily gain carries as the season goes on. They had someone else in their backfield. I forgot who it was off the top of my head. I watched a lot of football this weekend, that kind of stepped up big. Devin Funchess for the Indianapolis Colts out with a collarbone injury, and he will go on the injured reserve. Jabal Sheard, outside linebacker, defensive end type, questionable with a knee injury. Running back Jonathan Williams, receiver Penny Hart, both questionable. But, overall, you know, they're kind of healthy after week 1 in comparison to where they were before week 1. Jacksonville has a lot of guys questionable, and this is, you know, in my opinion, karma. Okay. Of course, Nick Foles is going on the injured reserve with a collarbone injury. Marcell Dareus, Ronnie Harrison, Cam Robinson, Calais Campbell, Yannick Ngakoue, Josh Oliver, all of them questionable for week 2. And that's what you get, Jacksonville. That's what you get for being pieces of crap on the football field, acting like a bunch of jacklegs and honestly, you know, disrespecting what this sport is. You've got a chance to line up and hit someone in the mouth each and every play, and you decide to get chippy after the whistles. and really make it look bad on TV. Tyreek Hill for the Chiefs out week two. Garrett Dieter questionable for week two, undisclosed injury. And I thought the Chiefs actually had moved on from him. I'm not sure what's going on with that. Maybe with a couple of injuries they now have. You know, nobody's gone on the IR for the Chiefs after playing week one. Mahomes, it's listed as questionable. He's obviously going to play. He played the entire second half for the Chiefs. Safety Jordan Lucas with a back injury, questionable at Oakland. So Chiefs, very healthy team so far. I already mentioned that Hunter Henry injury and Trevor Williams will be going on the injured reserve, the cornerback for the Los Angeles Chargers. Rams, Eric Weddle had a concussion, so he is now under the league protocol, questionable to play against New Orleans. Miami, no huge changes. I'm not exactly sure who the starters are and who they're not. I believe Albert Wilson, wide receiver, the calf injury, is questionable for week two versus New England. And we've heard that a bunch of players, I think it was half dozen or a dozen players, had asked to be released by the team or traded. Minnesota Vikings, Mackenzie Alexander with an elbow injury, Mike Hughes with an ACL injury, ACL sprain, I believe, are questionable. Marcus Cannon, doubtful for week two for the New England Patriots at Miami. I said Demaryius Thomas got traded. He is just a little bit banged up in the hamstring. N'Keal Harry, ankle, IR'd before the season started last Monday. For the Saints, Mario Edwards on the defensive end, hamstring questionable. Sheldon Rankins, big man on the inside, questionable for week two against the Rams. Inside backer Will Compton and other outside backer Craig Robertson are, questionable as well for week two. Javoris Allen and Shane Vereen in their backfield are also, you know, questionable with some undisclosed, injuries, since the season started. I think it could be, more of a skirting the, league rules on depth charts and whatnot. New York Giants, Kevin Zeitler, and Darius Slayton are injured, and Jamal Adams questionable for week two for the Jets. Quincy Enunwa announced as out. Sam Darnold questionable. CJ Mosley and Quinnen Williams both questionable. I expect pretty much most of those guys to play. JJ Nelson will be questionable for the Oakland Raiders coming to Kansas City. Jonathan Abram had a shoulder labrum injury, and it looked really bad on the field. He was carted off in a stretcher by the field staff and everybody out there, the medical staff. And he'll be out for week two. Guard Gabe Jackson, MCL strain, will be out for week two. Gary and Conley and Vontaze Burfict both are questionable as well. Actually, I think it wasn't Abram. It was Abram's butt that injured Conley. That's what happened. Conley with a neck injury, questionable. Corey Legit and Max Crosby both questionable as well. Moving to Philadelphia, Cam Grigor-Hill is out. Nate Sudfeld, backup quarterback, out. Jordan Mailata is out, Mailata. I don't know how to say his name properly, but I believe he had rotation minutes for their offensive line, will be out as well. Malik Jackson got put on the injured reserve. Big piece of their defensive line. Roosevelt Nix, moving on to Pittsburgh. Roosevelt Nix will be out. Their fullback, Joe Hayden's questionable. Sean Davis at safety, Juju Smith-Schuster, T.J. Watt, and Marquise Pouncey, all questionable. So pretty banged up, to be honest with you, are the Pittsburgh Steelers in terms of those question marks right there after playing the New England Patriots. They don't get an easy break playing the Seattle Seahawks, the San Francisco 49ers have three players listed as out already, Trent Taylor and Jalen Hurd at the wide receiver spots, and Tevin Coleman in their backfield with an ankle injury listed as out as well. Jason Verrett and Jimmy Ward in the secondary are listed as questionable, and Robbie Gould, their kicker, is questionable as well. They've got other guys already listed as injured, but most of those depth guys opposed to starters. Out for week two, David Moore with the Seattle Seahawks, moving on to the Seahawks. Ziggy Ansah listed as questionable. Nico Thorpe listed as questionable. LJ Collier and Joey Hunt, not sure the amount of minutes these guys are playing, or amount of snaps rather, not minutes, these guys are playing. But those are the injuries there to Seattle. Tampa Bay, and I know this is going on kind of long here, guys, but we're almost through these teams. I've done it alphabetically. Justin Evans, safety, IR'd on Monday. Blaine Gabbert with the shoulder injury didn't practice, and he'll be out for week two. He's the backup to Winston there at quarterback. But other than that, relatively healthy. Tennessee Titans, pretty healthy themselves, but Cameron Wake is questionable, veteran player there with an undisclosed injury. And then Reggie Gilbert and Kevin Pamphile are questionable as well. That's a offensive lineman and linebacker. Washington's running back Darius Geis and second year end out of Stanford Jonathan Allen are doubtful for week two. Colt McCoy, their backup quarterback, will be out week two. Fabian Moreau and tight end Jordan Reed, Fabian corner, will be questionable. Jordan Reed questionable. He had a concussion suffered in the preseason from a late hit. Pretty blatant hit, not a late hit. It was kind of as Reed was going down, someone lowered their head into him, probably someone that didn't even make a squad. And that rounds out the injury report for week two. I know that was pretty long-winded there. We're already running on 30 minutes, and this will be the ad break. Stay tuned after the break for me to get into my local news here with the Kansas City Chiefs. All right, now let's start talking about some week two expectations, and then I'll end it off with my home team and give, my thoughts on, the secondary, the defense, and everything that they did in the first game under Steve Spagnuolo. We've got the week two matchups here. Tomorrow, Thursday night, kicking off the week, Buccaneers at Panthers. I'm going to take the Panthers by at least 7 points in this one. I'm not going to look up the odds this week, but Bucks not going to be able to beat the Panthers, especially there at home for the Panthers. Sunday noon games, we got Cardinals at Ravens. That's going to be an interesting one, okay? You've got two mobile quarterbacks playing in this game. Lamar Jackson seems to have, that offense figured out and everything that he needs to do to be a good quarterback in the league, and I'm not really sold on the Cardinals being able to maintain what they did in that comeback victory against the Detroit Lions. So I'm going to go ahead and take the Baltimore Ravens. You've got Hollywood Brown, who had an incredible game amongst others. The Ravens, I'll say, beat the Cardinals pretty handily at home. Okay, we got the Chargers taking on the Detroit Lions, and the Chargers without Hunter Henry and still no Melvin Gordon showing up for them against the Detroit Lions at Ford Field. And at Ford Field, I think the Lions are going to be a little bit tougher to beat. They kind of had really had a second half collapse last week. If they can play a complete game or play a good third quarter after having a good first half, I think they're going to go ahead and beat the Chargers. I'll take the Detroit Lions over the Los Angeles Chargers in that one. We've got Colts taking on Titans also at noon on Sunday. The Indianapolis Colts were kind of a surprise, but the Tennessee Titans were able to blow out the Cleveland Browns that everybody's been speculating a lot about and how good they could be in Baker Mayfield's second year. I think they're on his jock big time. But I like Tennessee in this one. I think Tennessee's defense showed a lot of good things there. Although, you know, you with the Indianapolis Colts, they've still got a solid defense. Talk like Darius Leonard and guys like that that round out, you know, their secondary, Malik Hooker, and whatnot. I think the Tennessee Titans will be able to take care of business, kind of pound the rock like they did last week, and work some RPOs into their offense with Mariota and do some good things to win at home. 49ers at Cincinnati. This is an interesting one, and I think this could be one of the closer games of the week. 49ers, they actually looked really solid last week, I think, in the debut of Nick Bosa and D Ford, his debut with the 49ers, they looked to have a solid amount of pressure. And with AJ Green, I think, projected out or listed out already. Yeah, he's already listed as out in that backfield for the Bengals, kind of being a little bit banged up, Mixon and Trevion Williams. I'm going to go ahead and say the 49ers get that job done on the road. I'd like to see maybe a little bit more out of Jimmy Garoppolo finding George Kittle and Goodwin a lot more in week two. Of course, you know, the running game's not the best, but Rita can get the job done at the correct times, you know, move some chains for him. Jaguars at Texans. I'm going to take Texans big time here. Jaguars without Nick Foles, Jaguars defense just chippy as all get out. And I think the Texans showed that they're very, very, very composed on offense. When it comes down to it, Deshaun Watson led that comeback, and it was not his fault that they lost. Sean Payton's incredible clock management there. A lot of people would have said, you know, what the hell are you doing? But he looked really smart at the end of that thing, and they pulled off that one-point victory over the Texans on Monday night. I think the Texans are hungry after seeing that thing happen, and I expect, you know, that defense that had Merciless playing pretty good, and they want to see J.J. Watt kind of explode a lot more, and I think it's an opportunity to do that against the Jaguars, who did not, you know, seem all that impressive in week one at all. They scored a garbage time touchdown, and that game could have been a lot further than what that scoreboard looked like. Vikings taking on the Packers. I like Green Bay in this one, but this is going to be another tough one to call in the NFC. You know, late in the season could have some playoff seeding ramifications. I liked what Green Bay was able to do defensively, holding the Chicago Bears to 3 points. The Minnesota Vikings also looked very, very impressive defensively. And overall, you know, I don't really have a solid guess on who's going to win that game, but I'm going to lean towards the Green Bay Packers. I mentioned earlier, I kind of root for them, kind of have been rooting for them for a while. Cowboys at Redskins. Redskins, although they looked pretty impressive in the first half, they collapsed at Lincoln Financial against the Eagles last week at Lincoln Financial Field. And I think, you know, the Cowboys are going to be riding that big win over the Giants. And they'll be able to take care of business well there in Washington. The Seattle Seahawks going to Pittsburgh, and I think, you know, everybody's going to be riding, you know, the Patriots and how good they were. This is an opportunity for the Pittsburgh Steelers to get back home and rebound after a loss, but I see the Seahawks, you know, maybe matriculating the ball very slowly offensively as they tend to do, but getting, you know, a solid showing from their defense against Roethlisberger and that offense, especially if Juju Smith-Schuster is out. That could be huge. The Steelers are kind of banged up going into this thing. I'm going to take the Seattle Seahawks. The Bills at the Giants next week. Bills, Josh Allen looked terrible. I'm sorry, but, you know, he didn't look very good. The Giants, they hung in there with the Cowboys for quite some time, and then the wheels fell off of the game. But the Giants at home, Eli Manning really didn't look very good week one at Dallas either. So, you know, you got two quarterbacks that are, you know, maybe not performing their best at all. And when has Josh Allen ever really performed great? He had, you know, one or two games that you would call good but not great last year. The Patriots at the Dolphins. Patriots wrecked the Dolphins on the road. No chance in hell the Dolphins win that thing. Chiefs at Raiders. I mentioned, you know, this is a later afternoon game, but the Raiders, you know, their home crowd was impressive last week, but it's not going to be enough, for them to, stop this Kansas City offense. And the Chiefs defense, is just, you know, this is just week two of most of those guys playing in a different spot on the field, a different location on the field, or, you know, with this team. I liked kind of some of the things that I saw out of, Bashaud Breeland, but, you know, there's a lot of room to improve. I know his name was getting called a whole lot, and maybe it was just the amount of room that he was letting up. He did make a couple of good plays though, yeah. I think Kansas City takes care of business. Josh Jacobs in that running game, however, you know, over 100 yards, two touchdowns. And it said he is the first running back to do that since LaDainian Tomlinson entered the league back in 01 out of TCU. LT, everybody knows how it goes. You know, he's a Hall of Fame runner, regardless of, you know, his team not winning any championships or anything like that. And he came damn close with Brett Favre in New York 1 year. The Saints at the Rams, you know, this is an interesting game. The Rams, you know, they didn't look to be as powerful on the offensive side of the ball, but maybe that was just McVay being quite vanilla with his play calling there in, week one. But, you know, I didn't watch the Rams game last week. Took on the Panthers. Oh, actually, you know what? I did. I had that split screened on my laptop and you know, I think that, they'll be able to, hold off the New Orleans Saints. However, you know, the momentum that they get from last week in that last drive that Drew Brees is like a Drew Brees and Sean Payton together. It's mad science what they can do, on a football field once they have their heads together, and proof of it was that 1-point victory last week whenever they had to skate the clock. Sunday afternoon as well, sticking with afternoon games, before we get into the prime time Sunday night football and Monday night football games next week. The Bears taking on the Broncos. Broncos really didn't show me anything, and neither did the Chicago Bears offense. So, you know, I think Flacco was throwing the ball, too hard underneath. He was, you know, kind of putting his hard throws behind his receivers. He was, or, you know, too high, and his location, his accuracy was off. And maybe, that had something to do with the nerves and the crowd noise and everything there in Oakland, but with a veteran quarterback, that should really not have anything to do with it. I think the Chicago Bears take care of business. I thought the Bears defense did a heck of a job against Aaron Rodgers. Of course, you know, holding them to 10 points last week. I look for the Bears to win this thing by probably about six to 12 points, you know. You know, one touchdown to two touchdowns and maybe, you know, a touchdown and a field goal, something like that, that they will win by, in the Mile High Stadium there in Denver. The Eagles taking on the Atlanta Falcons Sunday primetime game. Falcons, like I said, They didn't look to do very much last week. And, you know, Philadelphia had to make that comeback. I think that comeback, you know, kind of shows that those guys are, you know, able to overcome adversity. And being on the road at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium there in Atlanta, I see, you know, potential, especially with the wrist injury to Julio Jones, that the Eagles take care of business there. But it would not surprise me if that game went either way. Dan Quinn calling the defense now for the Atlanta Falcons. They didn't look to be extremely organized at all. They gave up like 21 points in the first quarter, second quarter last week. Quite ridiculous. And he's going to continue to call plays, and hopefully they can get some stuff together. You know, there's some bright spots, some young guys on that defense that are solid. And then they've got their veterans like Neal and Trufant in the secondary. I'm going to go ahead and say the Philadelphia Eagles take care of business on the road and win that thing. And then we've got the Cleveland Browns at the New York Jets. The Jets were in control of that game against the Bills. Wheels fell off for them. Hopefully, you know, I think they can learn from their mistakes, but the Cleveland Browns overall, Baker Mayfield a little bit banged up, but, you know, he's one of those guys that he's fiery. He's passionate about the game of football. I think he goes in there on the road and gets some of those people that were talking shit week one, to back off of him just a little bit. I think the Cleveland Browns take care of business on the road. And in those two primetime games, I'm taking both away teams to win them. And that's what I had for my predictions for next week. I did not mark those down since I wasn't really looking at odds or anything to let you guys know how I would pick them if I were betting. Cause, you know, last week I did that, just to see, since there hadn't been any games played. Now I'm kind of using the eye test to make some predictions. I have a lot of road teams winning, this next week. I think it'll be an opportunity for you guys to analyze that, in the ways that you've analyzed, you know, some of these teams in the past. A lot of the core groups of guys are still, you know, intact. But there was quite a few moves this off season. So that's what I had for the league as a whole. Now to get into more of my local stuff, I want to say shout out to Mizzou football for coming up with an incredible performance at home after that embarrassing loss to Wyoming. I was stiff about, you know, how they cannot do that, really ever again. But, you know, I'm going to lay off of saying stuff like that because it took a while for Gary Pinkel to get, the Missouri Tigers going. They were upset a few times themselves before, they reached, a level where they were consistent and you know, they pinnacle around, you know, 12 wins, which is solid for any organization in college sports, whether it be, you know, NCAA sanctioned or club. You know, Missouri Tigers right now this season, you know, we're under, the NCAA postseason ban. So it's kind of like, you know, a unit of guys going out there and playing for one another opposed to playing for championships and whatnot. Kelly Bryant looked very solid last week. I think he will improve and improve and improve. The more he plays with this team, we will figure out what he is capable of overall. And, you know, Nessler and Herbie back in the day when he was at Clemson really talked about how he could make it to the next level. Just like Deshaun Watson, and I've seen flashes of that. I've definitely seen flashes of that out of Kelly Bryant. Moving on from the Tigers before I bore some of you Jayhawkers that happen to be Kansas City Chiefs fans, picking the wrong team out there. How about you guys losing to Coastal Carolina? That's laughable. You know, but Wyoming's, FBS school, you're losing to FCS. Just recently moved up to FBS. If they are FBS, Coastal Carolina, that's just embarrassing. Les Miles, you can't turn it around just because of a coach. You've got to have recruiting. You got to have that recruiting, and you've got to have, you know, the focus and attention of guys that want to be there. And I think with Kansas, it's a lot of guys that want to use it as a stepping stone to showcase their abilities and get to the next level. Although they've got, you know, some guys I'm sure are completely bought in and sold on the Les Miles system that they are running with for this season. BYU pulled off a comeback last week against, who was it? Tennessee, and Zach Wilson. He's really impressive to me so far. Their offense is known to be, you know, kind of more of an athletic player's offense, and he's really shown, you know, kind of some skills of moving the pocket and everything that I like, picking up first downs and all of that. And that's what I got for college football. Coach Ed Orgeron and LSU got the job done at Texas. And then USC upsetting Stanford, not really a huge upset. Florida football, they were 45-point favorites, and they won by 45. I'm not sure. I think that's a push for most books. And overall, dude, they were playing Tennessee Martin, guys, and I really think that Florida's overrated, sitting there at number 9. However, you know, they've got a good win against Miami, although, you know, Miami football, they were pretty embarrassing against North Carolina, losing by 3 points, and I don't buy into Florida or Miami right now for the ACC. And I think Florida State down there, let me check them out. I think they lost this weekend as well. FSU football, I'm not sure if Willie Taggart's still their coach. Oh, they beat Louisiana Monroe by 1 point in overtime. So, you know, it took a extra point. Boise State's never a joke, though, guys. They really are, you know, a good football team. BSU is. They beat Florida State, and then they just beat Marshall, who was competitive with them. Now they're going to take on Portland State. I've been rooting for the Blue Turf guys for a long time. They've got, you know, guys like Leighton Vander Esch to the league and others that I actually enjoy watching because of their, you know, level of skill and how they remind me of some of the guys that I had the fortune to watch whenever I was in high school as a team manager. So the Kansas City Chiefs, you know, their defense, their gap control, looked okay up front. But what I really liked, you know, Frank Clark played a good game. He got that interception late. The TV, CBS broadcast got, bounced on us here in Kansas City. They blacked us out. And we had to watch the boring ending to that Titans and Browns game instead of, you know, seeing that pick six. We got to watch that crap shoot, that the Browns were last Sunday. I thought Chris Jones could play a lot better in that three tech. There was some plays where he, standing up, looking in the backfield, maybe a little bit too quick, thinking that he would be able to bull from that position, but it's easier to double team a guy in the position that he's at, kind of blind double team him or chip him without having to put too much effort on. The linebackers, I thought, played really well, really, really well. I liked what they did out there. Anthony Hitchens and Damian Wilson were meeting guys kind of at the line of scrimmage. They had a lot of tackles. I think once this front four for Kansas City with Ogba, Clark, Nadi, and Chris Jones. Sorry, I don't know why I was blanking on Jones. I was just talking about him earlier. Once they start to figure out, you know, the inside assignments, those two guys have been playing in the 3-4. So it's not, you know, that big of a difference, in my opinion. Playing D-line's playing D-line. You've got to use your technique, maybe a lot better in the 4-3 since that's, you know, your assignment's more, instead of the pass rush, you know, stick your head in there in the run game and come off of blocks, explode a lot more like you see guys like Aaron Donald do, instead of just beat the lineman and chase down the quarterback. Juan Thornhill, he had 8 tackles for the Chiefs. He led the team in tackles. That's the rookie safety. He had 5 solos. He came in and finished off 3 of them. Chavarius Ward, he's got to improve in the secondary. I really thought he has to improve big time. I liked what Kendall Fuller was doing, sticking guys up, at the line of scrimmage. You know, sticks and picks is a big motto amongst, defensive secondaries everywhere. I liked what Fuller was doing out there, but Ward and, you know, Breland played pretty solid himself. He was only targeted 3 times and he only gave up 1 reception. So that's real solid, work by him in his first game as a Kansas City Chief. I think that, Tyrann Mathieu, he was kind of invisible out there, which isn't a bad thing for a safety. There's a lot of room for improvement everywhere. I'd like to see, you know, a couple turnovers, maybe a couple more sacks. Emmanuel Ogba got that sack for the Chiefs. And Frank Clark got that pick in his first game. So, you know, there's a lot to improve on. And I see Chiefs fans just kind of saying, oh, anything that we could get to help the secondary. It's like, dude, we're just missing a nickelback. And just wait, after enough time, we'll see the Honey Badger really explode and help cover up some of the mistakes, as well as Juan Thornhill. No need to sound the panic alarm week 2, and we'll be taking on Derek Carr, who he looked very, very improved, in his second season with Gruden and the confidence that, the announcer was, for ESPN was saying that Gruden instilled in him whenever he played, in the locker room, for Gruden. And I think it was Greasy in Tampa Bay is who was talking. He said he gave him a handwritten, note sheet on things that he needed to do, on the week of the game. And then he would come out game day and give you even more pointers that helped you feel really comfortable and confident in the offense. So, Oakland, if they ride that confidence too high, I think this defense has the ability to smack them in the mouth. Hopefully we do that next week and we don't allow too much, from Josh Jacobs. He's an incredible, you know, he runs through the tackle almost every play, lunging forward, and he's a fighter out there. I, you know, enjoyed watching him at Alabama, and as long as he's not beating the Kansas City Chiefs, I'll continue to enjoy watching him in the NFL, although he's got that ugly Raiders uniform on. I remove my biases after we're done playing. And unless you're trying to help us in the playoff race, you know, beating, say, New England or something like that, then I have no problem, just rooting for the individual as opposed to the team, of Oakland and say, you know, maybe at some point in time, Drew Locke gets a chance in Denver. I will, you know, it's harder to root for him as a quarterback because of how much control he has over the wins and losses of that team. But I don't think anybody's going to be touching Kansas City in this division this year and, you know, maybe the foreseeable future if we can stay healthy. Tyreek Hill got his contract extended, one of the highest paid players. And I know I kind of went on a tangent about, you know, elite wide receivers. But a lot of people don't consider Tyreek to be elite. They just consider him to be a flashy weapon, which I think is ridiculous. I mean, you saw some of the catches he made last year, my Chiefs Kingdom folks. We saw, you know, everything that he was capable of last season. And hopefully it doesn't slow down. I know he's got this clavicle injury and whatnot. I think Watkins is poised to continue to do what he did last week. And we need to see some more out of Mecole Hardman. what's his name? DeAnthony Thomas, my guy. He is unsuspended. You know, I haven't heard of a Chiefs player getting unsuspended or removed from a suspension list early, possibly ever. And I'm happy for him. He's going to be able to come back in here, and he understands the offense. I really loved what Shady McCoy did. I think he carried it about 10 times for 83 yards or something like that. I actually have the stats over here in a new tab. Let me double check that out. Yeah, LeSean McCoy, 10 carries, 81 yards, 8.1 yards per carry. He had a big one, you know, at that 31-yard play. Damien Williams, he got, you know, 13 carries, and he really was kind of seemed a little bit lost out there at times, but he got a touchdown. So you can't hate him too much for that performance. It's only week one. Guys are going to get into the swing of things, and I look for the Kansas City Chiefs to be Super Bowl champions this season. I know the Patriots are the hot commodity. Everybody's going to be standing for them. Those that listen to Eminem, they know what I mean by that. You know, kind of just hot dick, like hot dick the hell out of them and whatever you want to say is involved in that, but get crazy and start Twitter riots and stuff out there with their stupid thoughts and opinions, not seeing the clear bias that is, you know, the league bias towards the New England Patriots, as they are a huge revenue gainer for the league. They get away with a lot, and I think if Antonio Brown was on any other team in the league, he would have already been put on the commissioner's exempt list. And I've got a couple of ESPN notifications. Yeah, no news about AB though yet. Maybe tonight, maybe tomorrow night or tomorrow afternoon before the Thursday night football game, the league will make a choice on whether he's going on the exempt list or not. Right now, since he's not under trial, or facing charges, from the court in Florida yet, I could see them just going ahead and letting him play. But, you know, the NFL has done this in the past where just because a situation arises, you get put on a suspension list. I think what he did, was disgraceful, to, you know, his teammates in Oakland, and especially he was very disgraceful to his teammates and coaches and management there in Pittsburgh. You know, everybody talks about CTE and whatnot. I think he's got, like, you know, diva mentality mixed with kind of fearing that he's going to slow down and whatnot. You know, I'm not going to make any other remarks about the situation with him and the young woman that is bringing those allegations against him, because, you know, nothing surprises me with professional athletes. Here in Kansas City, we dealt with one of the worst situations involving a player ever, probably the worst situation involving a player, a young player, shooting his fiance or wife or girlfriend and killing himself at the team facility with Javon Belcher. May everybody involved in that rest in peace and hopefully, you know, get forgiveness from God in that situation and all of that. But it's, you know, a tough sport, and the hits and everything over time, and maybe the allowance of you know, complete ability to spend money that was unfathomable for these guys at first. It overall, you know, the alcohol and everything with drugs and stuff like that, that these players get into outside of football. None of it surprises me. Of course, more more in the spotlight was the Aaron Hernandez situation. And I'm not equating what Antonio Brown did to those two specific situations, but I'm just saying that's reason to not doubt someone who brings about allegations like this. And I was actually reading something about, you know, a report that there were corroborating witnesses involving, you know, some 25-year-old athlete whose manager was very staunch about it not being his player, but it was unnamed, and it was kind of, you know, kind of weird to see something like that resurface around the same time that this new allegation came out against Antonio Brown, because it involved, you know, it said it was alleging rape against members of his own family, his cousins, and I don't put my name on that being Antonio Brown. I don't want to, you know, wager, you know, my moral compass and put blame on that just right away. We'll see how these things play out and turn out, but you know, this violence against women with the NFL it's got to freaking stop. I mean, at some point they've got to just start freaking locking these guys in a cage like they would to other folks that aren't, you know, as monetarily privileged or as you know, perceived in the spotlight as heroes. These guys are not heroes. I'm just letting you know that right now. Athletes in other sports act much, much better outside of their sport and to their community. Kind of one of the reasons why I like mixed martial arts. There's kind of a family aspect to a lot of those guys, and I'm not saying those guys are absolutely, you know, star pupils outside of there, but there's a lot less of this negative drama bullshit that is in the NFL. And you know, a lot of my favorite fighters have a lot of ventures outside, training kids and all of that stuff that they do, building gyms and reinvesting in their families, you know, keeping, you know, their families together, not having children with multiple different women and stuff like that. That's what I see, you know. I think that comes from the instructors of martial arts to be, you know, a man, what it means to be a kind person and what it means to be, you know, even in women's martial arts, you know, a kind woman and the precedent that you are, the standard that you are held up to be protected by your brothers and sisters that you train with and think about them in every action that you make, and that's lost in a sport that's got the drama like the NFL does. I don't really have much more to talk about. That's all I had for this episode of the Roundtable Sports Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to tell your friends. Be sure to hit me up on Twitter at TalkMoreSports. If you had any questions, comments, concerns about this episode, hit me up on there. I have a Facebook page as well that I will be tweeting out probably once or twice a week to see if we can't get anybody to join that. But I think, you know, there's something about, I think I started my Twitter account as the Missouri logo. Maybe a lot of now defunct accounts from college students at the university and everything that no longer follow me. We used to have a lot of players that followed as well. We still got a couple guys that follow us on there. I'm trying to get them to click on some of the stuff that I put out there. I don't really know exactly what I intend to grow out of this podcast, but actually I do, and that's a network of fans that can have, you know, general banter and discussions without getting in the feelings and making personal attacks against one another, having, you know, people meeting away fans at the stadiums that we go to and the venues that we go to and exchanging, you know, Twitters and whatnot, Twitter handles and whatnot, and just enjoying a game together while we poke fun at one another's teams and all of that stuff. You know, it doesn't have to be so serious. These are just sports. Life's a freaking joke. Mike Tyson just said that on his podcast the other day. He said, "I used to take things way too seriously. Life's a joke." He's like, "I have no clue how I got to the level that I got to." He's like, "It was a lot of work and everything." And that's, you know, because he took it serious, with the right guidance. But I think a lot of people take life too seriously while they don't have, you know, the guidance to let them know that everything is not as important as, you know, the time that we spend and enjoy with one another. You know, working and making a dime is not, as important as having a good time, outside of doing that. And we spend, you know, most people spend their entire, most of the time in their life that's awake at jobs and jobs that they don't enjoy. That's kind of why I do this podcast as well. I'd like to, you know, got a job interview tomorrow, to get some money, and I'm going to go back to school, get a communications degree and continue to try to build this podcast as well as, you know, get on with a, promotion. I'd love to talk, you know, to, players and you know, fans alike, interact with fans, of sports and let them, you know, give opinions that are, you know, most sports fans, when it comes down to it, once you remove the fanatic aspect and you start to think, more logically, like you were a general manager of a team or whatnot, you come to some very, very, solid points that everybody, could benefit from hearing and hearing again and again. So thank you for listening. At Talk More Sports on Twitter is where to find me. I will be tweeting out links there for these episodes of the podcast. If you want to listen on Apple Music, hit the subscribe button so you can get the latest as soon as it gets you know, published over to the iTunes store, as well as on Google Play. You've also got a subscribe button there where you can get you can refresh your page and see when I have a new episode coming out. But at Talk More Sports on Twitter is typically where the first announcements go for my podcast. Thank you all for listening to this episode of Roundtable Sports. We are brought to you via Anchor.fm, the best place to make a podcast. Thanks for listening.